Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Litton. I am the host of Spotlight on Youth, a radio show dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of children across the country. Spotlight on Youth is a project of the Children's Law Center, Inc., a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. The show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available on demand after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate by asking our guests questions on air by dialing 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149. And to indicate you have a question, you're simply going to press the number 1 on your telephone keypad and you'll be placed in the queue to be on the air. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose a question there. On this episode, we are talking about what happens to kids when they are returning to their communities and families after being court-ordered to spend time in a correctional facility or treatment center. This is most commonly referred to as reentry. It involves the transition of youth not only back into their communities, but also at the critical stage of transitioning into young adults. Often these kids face enormous challenges at every critical juncture. It's not uncommon to hear kids say that after their release they feel alone, they're returning to unstable and unsafe environments, that they're unable to re-enroll in school, they have no access to needed mental health services, treatment, or medications. They have no way to economically support themselves, no modes of transportation, and they experience homelessness or are transient. That there are competing and overwhelming demands from parole officers, family members, and friends, that they don't know how to manage everyday ordinary tasks on their own, and they struggle to know who they can trust and where they should place their loyalties. All this can lead to confusion, depression, desperation, apathy, and ultimately reoffending. In 2010, the United States Attorney General Eric Holder said that reentry is one of the most complex criminal justice challenges of the 21st century. We know that 3 years after release, recidivism rates in Ohio range anywhere from 27 to 46%, depending upon the type of program or facility the youth was placed in. Today's guests are going to talk about reentry and share how they're supporting kids who are in this transition period. So joining us is Eric Schaefer, who is the Assistant Court Administrator for the Juvenile Court located in Montgomery County, Ohio. Eric has been involved in community corrections for the past 20 years, holding various positions, including serving as the Director of Probation Services. He also previously worked as a substance abuse counselor and as an adjunct faculty for local universities. Nathan Lynch is the program director for the Lighthouse Community Management Program located in Cincinnati, Ohio. Nathan has 14 years of experience in treatment and program development for juvenile offenders, focusing on reentry services for the past 9 years. He also serves as an adjunct instructor at Miami University. Monty Bush is the founder and CEO of the Victory Project, a faith-based not-for-profit organization located in Dayton, Ohio. Monty incorporated his experience in business, law enforcement, and faith relations when creating the program that targets the needs of court-involved and disadvantaged male youth. The Victory Project has been very successful, lowering recidivism rates by more than 90% of its members. And we hope to be joining us a little bit later in the program is a young man named Shaquan, who is 19 years old. Shaquan spent 3 years in the custody of the Ohio Department of Youth Services. He graciously offered to share his experiences around reentry with our audience, and he's looking for some transportation, which we're going to be talking about, to get to a place where he can participate. So I'd like to welcome everyone to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you.
So Eric, Monty, and Nate, why don't you each explain what you do in relation to reentry and why this topic is important to you? Maybe, Eric, you can start us off.
Sure. Hello, everyone. This is Eric. I'm currently an administrator in Montgomery County, which is in Dayton, Ohio, and my role as it relates to reentry now is to ensure that the court is working with community members and mental health providers and school officials that we are focusing on the needs of youth that are reentering into our community. A lot of the things that you mentioned in the opening of the program are issues that we focus on when we're doing program development, when we're contracting with providers, and understanding that when these youth are returning to us, that we're thinking of those things, keeping them in mind, and doing programming to make sure that those issues are addressed. So my role these days is kind of around making sure that those programs are appropriate and doing what is needed to meet those needs.
Great, thanks. Monty?
Yeah, my role is kind of finding an alternative to the streets for our young men. For when guys come back and reentry from being out of home placements, they have initial support through probation, parole, family, friends, because everybody's excited to see them. But after time, that dwindles. They get off of probation, they fulfill their obligations to the community, and lots of times they're in a deficit from where they started to begin with, because now they have been out of the area for a while, they have a record. So Victory Project came along to try to create an alternative to that. And the reason I even got involved in this type of work was from my experience in law enforcement, as you mentioned, Lauren, at the beginning of the show. It was frustrating for me to be involved in law enforcement, which I have a deep love for, but I felt like we were just putting people in the system. The system was doing less rehabilitation and more punishment, and then they were coming out kind of worse than they started. And so that was a frustration for me, where I felt like I was trying to help people, but I really wasn't being able to help them in the way I wanted to. And then being a person of faith, I felt like the faith community had a much bigger role to play in helping with the youth and their families during these times of incarceration, and even more so post-incarceration. So I kind of took those experiences and experience in business to found the organization, and I love what I'm doing.
This is Nathan. I'm director of an intensive aftercare program with Lighthouse Youth Services, and it's kind of a holistic reentry program. I started out with my background in treatment as a therapist and working with these young men, and kind of saw that treatment, while important, there also needed to be a focus on workforce development, education, and also kind of general community restoration of those relationships. And so it kind of expanded into addressing those issues while infusing the treatment issues that could bring these guys back to kind of developing a new role in the community. And so out of that kind of infusion of various services, we found the intensive aftercare program model that kind of creates that holistic programming for us.
Okay. So, in my introduction, I gave some of the overarching challenges that kids face. So perhaps you can go into more details about it and even talk about some of the kids that you've seen and their struggles. Nathan, do you want to start us off?
Yes. I guess in thinking about that, there's some things that are very practical, when we talk about housing or transportation or resources. But really the first one that comes to mind as far as challenges that I see most of our guys facing is finding relationships that support a new direction for them in the community. So they're if they were incarcerated and were lucky enough to be in some good treatment services or had some influences that brought them to the idea of, hey, I should make some changes, and I have some ideas about how to do that, and maybe I've even started to do that or started planning how to do that. And those, in order to make changes, just like any of us in trying to make changes, we have to have relationships that support us in that. And without that, it really is too much. It's too hard. And that's looking at family, peers, community relationships. Coming after that, which is a little more practical, is just the idea of life skills, general development. There is some development that's missed in the time prior to incarceration when they were struggling, when they were committing crimes, and then also missing development opportunities while incarcerated. So catching up on basic life skills. And then, I would say basically feeling competent and needing opportunities for success, and with that finding hope. Something new that we've been focusing on is the idea of trauma. Our therapists and case managers have kind of just been recognizing the high percentage of our guys who were showing, you know, trauma reactions, who were having barriers even towards work, education, riding the bus, that were due to past trauma. And so we've been working on finding ways to engage these guys in treatment and help with that they're willing to engage in.
Now, this is Monty. I think that's great, Nathan, because what you just spoke about is something we're seeing, and it's almost like our young men are experiencing a PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorder, because they're being raised in such dangerous environments, health-wise and physical danger that they're exposed to constantly, that has a long-term effect on their their relations and how they can connect. And since you covered that so thoroughly, I think the other thing I would pick out about a challenge that we see is accessibility to jobs. Most of our young men come from urban environments, and as we all know, pretty much every city I've been in around, those urban environments have gone to the suburbs as far as jobs go, as far as opportunities go, especially for somebody who's coming into kind of their first job, their initial job. And for a young man in the Dayton area, he's going to take a 45-minute bus ride one way to access a local mall where they're going to find, you know, fast food and retail. And so accessibility to work and recognizing some of those PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, combined to create some pretty significant challenges for our young men in our communities. And it's almost, there's a process that has to take place of undoing those experiences by giving them healthy relationships, a consistent relationships to start to unpack and undo some of those negative experiences they've had.
And I think it's interesting, Nathan, and as you kind of address some of those barriers, you do see movement. It brings to mind a young man who was in the Department of Youth Services, or DYS, for about 2.5 years and was just a little skittish in general of just being in the community. And we start out with small competencies and successes, and boy, he was showing up here even when he didn't have appointments. And part of that, because I think he was building a sense of, hey, I can do some things. I can be successful. Went to some job interviews. We role-played, practiced how that would go, and he felt really good, really successful and competent with that. That led to getting a job. Unfortunately, the job was fairly far away, and it required him to take a bus for an hour to the airport, Cincinnati Airport, and put a bike on the bus, and then he would ride the bike an additional 2 miles to it was with DHL for packaging, a great job. It was over 2 hours of total transit time that required him riding a bike and so forth for a third shift job. Now, that took a mm-hmm. long time, many months to get to that point, but it was exciting to see how, when those barriers were addressed, just the hope flourished, a sense of competence and ability flourished, and he was willing to work hard because of it.
This is Eric. Nate and Monty bring up some excellent points. From my standpoint, what I think, this is such a critical time in a guy's life when they're making this move, because a lot of them, I believe, want to be successful. But when they are coming back to their community, a lot of times, unfortunately, that transition is not a positive one. And I think that is a huge challenge they face. They're coming back in contact with delinquent peers that they may have been a leader of before they went to treatment, or maybe even to a stay at the Department of Youth Services. So they have a certain status to overcome. They need an opportunity to choose the positive connection. I think that's a lot of what Nate and Monty are talking about. When they're connecting back to the community, they have a couple of different ways to go. And if they can make a positive one by finding a job, doing what's right, and not connecting with the same old story that they were doing before they left with the same old folks that they were involved with, that is very key. So that's a huge challenge, because they deal with that peer pressure that is real. A lot of times folks that end up going to these providers were leaders before they left. So when they come back, they have to figure out a way to lead in a different way and find a positive connection to the community.
And Eric, I thought maybe you might also have a different perspective working with them still within the system about the family engagement aspect of it as well, and perhaps having to follow just conditions of probation or parole that you see and any issues that may create. And I do want to let everyone know that Shaquan is on the line, so we will turn to him next. Maybe, Eric, after you share your thoughts to hear what he has to say.
Sure, and I'll share real quickly. I think the court plays a huge role, not in doing further punishment or trying to find ways to make sure that these guys are doing exactly as prescribed, but I think we have a role to support. Our judges, Judge Koontz and Judge Capizzi, have entered into a reentry process where folks that are coming back from either the Department of Youth Services or even an out-of-home placement, they have a hearing. The reason for that is twofold. First, we want to make sure that the young person is understanding what's expected of them, because a lot of times they're not given a clear message as to what's expected. And the judge will do that in a formal hearing, and a lot of times it sinks home a little better than maybe a parole officer or someone giving over a piece of paper. The second function of that court hearing is to hold the providers accountable. We have the school representatives there. Sometimes Monty may come from the Victory Project because he's working with someone that's coming home, and we're making sure that the job is in place and some things that are going to allow that positive connection to the community that I spoke of are in place, and we're holding the providers accountable for doing that. So we have a reentry process that goes on where the parole officers and the court come together, and that plan is kind of locked in stone in front of a judge so that everyone is on the same page, so that that youth then kind of at that hearing is released and they feel like they understand exactly what's next for them rather than feeling alone, feeling that they don't know what they're supposed to do next, and then having that negative connection in the community that I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Great. And we definitely want to spend some time a little bit later talking about how you developed that collaborative approach too.
Sure.
So, Shaquan, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. We're very excited that you wanted to be on this show. We think the topic is very important. So, my understanding is that you did spend 3 years in DYS. Is that correct? The Department of Youth Services?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. How long have you... been out? Have you been back?
A year and like a year and 2 months.
A year and 2 months. And so I bet you remember before you were released about all your hopes that you had. Can you tell us about some of that, your hopes you had, and then what the realities were like after your release?
I mean, the main thing I was just hoping that I got out to come home back to my family, but the reality, it just didn't feel real because it's been like, if I've been in there for so long, and that it didn't feel real at first, and then once they let me go, that's when I knew it was real. I talked to my parole officer, he got me enrolled into this program, and ever since I've been in this program, I haven't been in trouble since I've been out. They got me 2 jobs, so I really just been staying focused, and they've been helping me stay on track.
Mm-hmm. So the program you're talking about is that Lighthouse Youth Services?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And how long were you out before you got connected to that program?
I want to say a month. I think my parole officer gave me a month to just chill, go see everybody. Then he enrolled me into this program. And mm-hmm. At first, when I first came to the program, I thought I wouldn't like it. But then after I seen all the positive outcome, everything that is helping me accomplish, like goals and stuff, as far as working and enrolling into school. So it turned out for the best.
Are you comfortable sharing about why you were sent to DYS?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit of, like, what your life was like before that, before you went to DYS, and how you wound up there?
Okay, well, my mom was married to my stepdad, which they're no longer together now, but, and it was like a little, how do I explain? It was a little messed up in the house, like, not messed up, but unbalanced. Like, me and him bumped head all the times, and he had tried to turn me against my mother and say that when stuff came up missing, I was the one who took it or whatever. And I wouldn't even be nowhere near the house at the time when stuff came up missing. So I just stopped asking my mom for stuff because he got it in her head that I was taking the stuff, so I wasn't going to ask for it no more. So I just felt like I had to go get it myself. So I wound up robbing people. I robbed, like, I think, like, 6 people. And then I had got, locked up. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we just bumped heads a lot. I mean, now that I'm older, we don't really bump heads no more because he's not really around. I just, when we see each other, we just say hi, like, hey, what up, or something. Or we just go about our business.
And you're 19 now?
I'm 20.
You're 20. So what is life like for you now? What's a typical day?
Oh, it's excellent. I don't have any complaints. Any complaints at all.
What do you do?
Right now, I'm currently on unemployment because where I worked at, they shut down. I was working for UPS. And, like, UPS has a whole bunch of different branches. So I was working in a branch that got closed down. So I think I have a interview, I think, Monday for Super Jobs. Once I found out that I was being unemployed, I called back up here. And then they said they were going to see what they can do for me. And then I got a call the next day saying about the they was telling me who was hiring, when is the open interviews and everything. So everything's okay.
Okay. Well, are there any current things that you're still struggling with that you want to share with our audience for people who maybe don't know how hard it is, you know, after you've been locked up for 3 years and you're still relatively young and coming out?
I mean, being locked up so long, you know, I miss out on a lot because time don't stop when people go to jail. So I missed out on a lot of birthdays, people passing, funerals I wasn't able to make it to, just my two younger sisters that I missed them growing up. So when I come out, everybody all grown or whatever. But I mean, it just ain't some place you want to be. You sitting around, people telling you what to do every day. You can only see your loved ones when they allow you to see them on visitation days. It just so much. People don't really understand how much freedom they got until it's taken away from them, whether it's for a short, briefer time or for the rest of their life. They just don't understand until they're actually in that predicament. So with me doing my little time or whatever, and then going from there, from DYS to coming back to reality, I mean, I had to adjust, but it didn't take me that long. It just got, like, I got back used to everything. But you can tell how much you missed or whatever, how everything that changed. But it's just not some place nobody should be. Everybody should be free with their family, just minding their business. If I'd have knew that, I would never end up in the place that I was at.
Okay, thank you. Nathan and maybe Eric, I don't know if there's a couple things that maybe you can respond to. One of the issues that I've seen talking to many of the young men who have served time is something I think that Shaquan's talked about is being institutionalized, you know, the institutionalization, everything, you know, your food is given to you, time is regulated, and then when you come out, this managing all the responsibilities, and also time has passed, and you haven't you don't have those friendships anymore. So I don't know if you want to speak to some of that. And then, Nathan, I'd also like you to follow up by kind of explaining the case management services that Shaquan has received, you know, that he was alluding to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some of those effects of being institutionalized are very basic, even just as far as planning out your day or planning out tomorrow, where when you're following a structure and you're basically told what to do and when to do it, the idea of thinking, I need to get this done by the end of the week and I need to plan to do some of it tomorrow and then this step the next day and so on, just some of those basic life skills that are actually developed fairly young in age can, even if they were there before incarceration, can fall away. And so a lot of times it's just being very basic, and we do a lot of pre-release work before young men come back to the community. And so the idea then is to try to assess where they're at and what the effects of the institutionalization may be. The other part is just relationships. So if the majority of the relationships with peers were negative and maybe a lot of family conflict, and then ways of forming and maintaining relationships while in an unsafe place, which could be an institution, they don't play out when you come back to the community and try to have positive relationships to try to do something new. So you kind of feel inadequate and not able to do that. Even just down to riding buses, we have guys that feel unsafe on the bus, and rightfully so. It's just a new experience, and just being outside can be a new experience after being incarcerated for several years. As you asked also about case management. Our case management here at Lighthouse, we follow kind of an overarching case management model, but just the idea that the case managers, they do probably any job description, any case management job description that you could find probably falls under their job description. They have smaller caseloads than normal, I think, and because of that, they have to be experts in the area of workforce development, regular contact with our local schools, and being able to discern what type of educational programming would be best fit, GED or credentials or high school. So they got to kind of be an expert in that area. They all go into juvenile justice institutions and do pre-release services. And then also they have a strong mental health component, so they work hand-in-hand with the therapist. They share office with the therapist. And so the mental health issues, while they're working on them in individual sessions, they're also, the case managers are well aware of them to help them apply them to daily life, because those are the barriers often that are getting in the way of relationships or jobs or school.
Great. Eric, is there anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I'll just have a small statement about how important it is to focus on those little things when someone may be institutionalized. The little things that they learn every day in their daily life are absent for, in his case, up to 3 years. So we have to remember that as a reteaching that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan mentioned life skills is exactly it, and we have to take it slow. You know, if it's a younger person that's coming home, maybe he's 16, he may be going back to a high school, and he hasn't ridden the bus to school and remembered how to switch classes and follow his schedule and, you know, how to obtain lunch. And those are things that we almost have to walk through. And pre-release is a fantastic way, because you actually have a chance to practice those things and to really put those things up. They may seem small, and maybe we don't even think about them, but that's a new thing that person would be facing if they've been away from home for, you know, up to 3 years. So,
and Monty, well, so our audience doesn't know that Victory Project and Lighthouse are very unique. I mean, these programs don't exist all over the country. We need them to. Not yet. We hope so. That's one of the. And you know, Shaquan talked about employment being an issue. You mentioned that as well. I just wanted to give you the opportunity, you know, to briefly describe sort of some of the things that are happening in your program that are building skills in the young men.
Yeah, thank you, Lauren. And the great thing about what we do, it's complementary and not competitive with what Nate's doing and what Eric's doing with the court. it's complementing those things. And we focus on something called entrepreneurship. And what we do, instead of trying to find them jobs, because we were having very little success at that in the beginning, we said, let's create our own small businesses so they can relearn some of those skills, those basic skills on being timely and how to interact with people in a positive way and how to deal with conflict management in a positive way. At the same time, building a resume, earning some money, learning about financial responsibility in an environment where it is a nurturing environment, it is rehabilitation. Unlike if you are hired by a typical employer, they're not going to have the time or the expertise to walk you through that. So by having our own small businesses within the organization, it creates just a very unique opportunity for them to grow in a healthy environment while learning marketable skills. And it's also become a funding source for the mission itself and the nonprofit itself. We can make some money enough not just to pay the youth, but actually roll that back into our program so we can become more and more self-funded. And it's a great model. I think it is the way of the future, because there are so many programs out there that get locked into grants, and when we rewrite our budgets based on that grant, and when those grants go away, whether it's a local government or federal grant, it can really have a detrimental impact on the entire organization. So well, our young men run a landscaping business where we start off with just a handful of properties with push mowers, and now we have 57 properties. We have an urban agriculture garden and with Ohio State University, and we have a tree farm for the city of Dayton where we're contractors. And the young men just don't do the labor. They write the invoicing. They meet with the customers. They do marketing. So when they leave us, they really do have some marketable skills that's going to equate to their next step and next phase of their career, not just another job. And we think it's fun. We have a blast, and we have so many customers that want to participate because they see these young men working so hard to improve themselves, and they have such a great personality and have such a great work ethic that you're endeared to them. And if everybody knows anything about business, it's about building those relationships, and our young men are they are the cornerstone of it. So we owe all of our success to how hard they're working.
Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to come to visit Victory Project and to speak to several graduates, and I would say probably the number one thing, they were very proud of the job skills that they learned, but the sense of family, that was the biggest thing that all of them talked about, being able to come to a place every day, sit down with anyone who came and have dinner together, to study together, to play together, and then to also learn those skills, which kind of leads me, we do have questions coming in from the audience, and I also want to remind people they can call if you want to ask a question live on air, 347-994-1149. You just push number one on your keypad. Shaquan, we have a question for you talking about family. Somebody wanted to know what your relationship is like with your mother now and where you are in the process of sort of resolving things and talking about the past, if you've rebuilt trust with her.
Yes, everything's fine now. We just got that little burden out of our life. Like, she divorced him because he seen that everything that he was saying, blaming on me, was a lie. And it just sad. Well, it ain't sad to say, but it took me going to jail to figure out that. For them to figure out that it wasn't me taking those things, and she apologized. She helped me during the whole time. She was my support. Her and my two sisters, they were my support. They was up there every visit to come see me. She really came through for me. I mean, I graduated 3.8 honor roll, the top of the whole institution. I mean, we're excellent now. All three of us have jobs. We have cars. Everything's back to where it's supposed to be.
Great. Did any of you have a question for Shaquan? I hear some to the other guests. I don't know if anyone had a question, Eric, Monty, or Nathan.
This is Monty from Victory Project. First of all, congratulations, man. I know it's not easy what you've accomplished, and you've crossed so many hurdles already. What was your relationship like with your friends before and after? And the reason I ask is because a lot of our guys, they feel like they've got this brotherhood or guys group around them that is closest family, if not closer. But when they are sent off to prison or DYS, for example, they don't hear from them anymore, and they're not there to support them. And I heard you say you had your mom and sister support. But what was your relationship before and after with your friends?
I mean, like, before I got locked there, you know, I was close with them or whatever. The ones that I was really close to, they rolled me, but they weren't able to come see me because they wasn't blood related.
Right.
But once I got out of there, I didn't mess with a lot of people that I was messing with before because I feel like if they ain't have nothing positive going for themselves and I'm hanging around them,
right,
that might be a trigger, or it might be something that go off to make me want to go back to that lifestyle. So I don't even surround myself around those type people anymore.
That's great, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, Nate, Eric, and Monty, talking about, and then I'll weave in some of the other questions that are out there, but maybe you can talk about what's been successful and what remains challenging in the system community collaboration.
And collaborating with the community is, I think, a lot of times the missing link in dealing with reentry. You know, we focus on the young men coming back and dealing with professionals, whether it's case manager, therapist, or POs. But, you know, as we commented on before, a lot of times that's short-lived. After that, they're living back in with the community in their neighborhoods. And so there has to be change there. And so we put a lot of resources and a lot of time helping the guys to develop a new role or a new relationship with their community from a restorative justice perspective, that the idea that their crimes, they hurt their communities, they hurt their neighborhoods, and we try to help them understand that while at the same time giving them an opportunity to restore that relationship, to develop a new role or a new name, even if you will, within their communities. And so there's different ways we do that. We do that through service learning, which is, that takes care of a lot of things. One, it helps us build job skills. It helps us give them some work experience, build competencies. But then also then they're serving their communities along with community members, which kind of helps restore that relationship. We have community lunches, we call them, and it's basically just we invite anybody from the community who we come in contact with, and we invite them to lunch with our guys and our staff, and we eat lunch, and we share successes, we share struggles, and it gives our guys, again, an opportunity to shake some hands, introduce themselves, networking, kind of work on some of those life skills and social skills and gain competency again in being accepted and connected with their communities. So I think that's really a very important. I think some of the struggles with that are also the finding employment partners within the community. Monty's model is incredible, and I do think that is a great model for the future. But at the same time, trying to find employers who we're willing to take on our guys even after they've been through leadership training and workforce development training and service learning is hard. And so, that's an ongoing struggle. But most of the time when we've engaged community members and shown them what we're about, shown they've got a chance to meet our guys, they come back. They do group mentoring with our guys, teaching skills and sharing what they have. And our guys are very receptive to that, even more so sometimes than they are to professionals. And I think the other side that's really cool is it has a big impact on the community itself. We were talking about the restorative justice aspect, and one of the just a community member, a neighbor who had done service learning with the guys and learned about restorative justice from our young men, had a neighbor who had damaged her property. And she said she called the police and had that all in process, but she canceled all that and went back and took a more restorative justice approach with her own life and her own situation. So she shared that in the community lunch. And so it's a great opportunity for community connection and kind of overall healing, which allows them to move forward.
Go ahead, Monty, you're fine.
That was Nate. Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, I'm sorry. what I would say about the connection back, I think in the old days we used to refer to, hey, we need to make a referral. We need to make a referral out to this agency, to that agency. And I think Nate is mentioning the same thing that I'm saying. We have to be able to take these young people, these young men, and connect them to an organization, connect them to the community. It's more than just saying, hey, go see Nate down at Lighthouse, but it's finding the folks in the community that are going to accept that connection and not just make one phone call and make an attempt and make sure they get paid maybe. It's the ones that are going to be relentless. They really at their heart care about kids. We're so lucky to have a program like the Victory Project right in our backyard. I can remember the first time that Monty Bush gave me a call when I was the director of probation, and I've received many calls like that, and I couldn't shake him because he really didn't care. He just wanted to help people, and he wanted to find out how he could, and now he's grown this agency into, you know, a thriving business for our young people and a way to success for our young people. So I think it's cultivating the folks that really want to do that. We're also very fortunate in Dayton. We have a division of Lighthouse Incorporated that Nate's working for down in Cincinnati that is the same way. The people don't want to let go. They want to make sure that those kids are connected. And I think that's how you cultivate good reentry programs, is you find the folks that are willing to relentlessly work with kids. And then the story we have today, I think you have another example of that.
Shaquan, you know, when you first started talking, you said that when your parole officer referred you to Lighthouse, you weren't so sure about the program, right? And mm-hmm. I'm sure most people feel the same way. And like Monty's program, there's even kids that go there that haven't been involved in the juvenile court system. So thinking about people listening in who may be thinking about starting a program, what helped you build trust with Lighthouse? What did they do that you said, you know what, they're real, and I can see that they're going to help me, and I can trust in this?
Really, it was more like their actions speaking louder than their words. They were just doing everything that they said they were going to do instead of just saying one thing and not doing it.
Do you have an example of something that stands out to you that maybe really turned it that trust around for you?
Okay, like, I'm trying to think. It's just, I just go off of actions for real.
Mm-hmm.
They just, because when I first came into this program, I stayed to myself. Like, it was a group of kids. Everybody really stayed to themselves. It was really, pretty much everybody's first day. And then we started doing our community project when we was going around the neighborhoods, trimming hedges and stuff like that, picking up trash. And then you just start building a bond with people that you don't even know, and that you probably don't even know that you're building a bond at that time. But as far as trust, I really don't know, because I'm when they come to trust on people, it was really hard. I don't know how they broke that.
Okay.
But they just people of their words. That's what I'm gonna say.
Mhm.
They
okay.
keep their word.
You, all of you are talking about success. So, and some of our listeners are asking about that. I mean, how are we defining success? When are you determining, either from a court or a community-based organization perspective, that it's time for the kids to graduate, to transition out?
Well, there are different definitions in kind of stages of that. With our young men who are coming into our intensive aftercare program, we start with them 4 to 5 months before they come in to the community, so it's a pre-release services. And then maybe they're with us for another 5 to 6 months in the community. Probation, if everything goes well, probation would end about that time. And then they would not have to continue with our services, but they could if they wanted to. And our services kind of decrease in intensity based on their needs. And so when you look at success, you know, our success is that one, from a, I guess, a service standpoint, that we have a positive relationship with them that extends outside court ordered, that the young men come back and connect with us, and we're, you know, like Saquon said, he, you know, had trouble with his UPS job, gave us a call, and we got to try to help. You know, we want to be there because we generally care and have resources that, that we can offer, not just because someone is court-ordered. But I think, you know, the recidivism is the big thing that everybody's talking about and should. But in looking at true recidivism, it's important to look at 1, 2, and 3 years out from at the end of services or the end of probation, whatever point you want to pick. But I think also in looking at that is looking at resiliency factors or protective factors, like how many are employed. You know, I can tell you last quarter, 50% of our guys got a job. But I can also tell you that 50% of those lost a job and got another one. So we're working on job retention right now. So, you know, but that and also family engagement is another outcome that we spend a lot of time in educational advancement. And then industry-recognized credentials and post-secondary education, too. They're all protective factors that, in the end, research and statistics tell us will decrease recidivism.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts?
This is Monty from Victory Project. We, like you mentioned before, not all of our youth have been incarcerated or have been out of home placement. We initially started that way, but then we started seeing young men who want the same opportunities these guys were getting and hadn't committed a crime yet. So we felt kind of awkward of saying, I'm sorry, we can't help you until you commit a crime. That wouldn't have been the smart thing to do. So we have young men that are there at Victory Project even with before they've been committing crimes or at least been caught committing crimes. And so we can hopefully do some diversion on that end. We go up all the way through graduating high school. So a young man could be our program for several years. And once they graduate high school, again, that could be at the age of 18 or 19 because some of those guys are doing a lot of credit recovery. Once they graduate high school, they have a period of time where they have to transition out, and then they become alumni of the program. And some of those alumni become employed in our businesses part-time or full-time. Post program, and again, that's a great model for the other young men to see that this guy has not only graduated the program, but he's actually continuing to work, and he's going to college, or he's going, you know, getting a trade school degree, and so that's one way we track success. Of course, recidivism, as Nathan mentioned, and also the employment piece and getting involved in a faith community is important to us. That's kind of who we are. Because we know that there's a lot of support that faith communities can provide if we can draw them into this arena more often and with more frequency and more success. And the important thing is these guys are making these choices on their own. Our entire program is voluntary. Even though we work with court-involved youth, they don't have to come there. It's not they're not mandated to be part of the program. And so we try to make it so attractive to them that they want to be there. And as you mentioned, we're there for dinner. They have dinner 5 nights a week, and, mm-hmm. and we only close on Christmas and those kind of things with consistency. And the partnership we have with Montgomery County Juvenile Court is huge because they've been kind enough to let us have access to these folks to share our program. So there's the things that Nathan's hitting and the things that Eric's hitting are – they're all collaborative. Nobody can do this on their own, and that's a huge part of that.
Well, we have only about 10 minutes left, and I really want all of you to share what advice you might have for other communities that are interested in building or enhancing their reentry services, and do so, though, I think, from a framework of sharing sort of your lessons learned. I think we learn, you know, and we can relate by the mistakes we've made or our own aha moments. So if you have any of those, that would be great.
This is Eric. I can go first. I think the point that I want to get across, and I'm coming from a juvenile court perspective, is that when agencies, schools, whoever it may be, is going to engage with one of our youth, either in a reentry or in any capacity, we have to figure out a way to focus on strengths. We have to figure out where the strengths in the family are, where the strengths in the young person are, and don't let any particular crime define that person. You know, unfortunately, in juvenile justice, we slap labels on a lot of things, but those labels only represent a very small piece of that youth's life or what that youth has to offer. And if we can focus on what we do well and develop our programs around strength-based practice and where kids will most be successful, we just have such a better chance. So as I would move forward, that's the piece that I like to get across is, you know, what's happened doesn't define the youth. Everything is in the future, and the possibilities are endless for all of these kids.
One of the things that we learned in or in the process of retooling a little bit in the program is really taking time, and we do this during pre-release services, but also can be done, you know, immediately when the young man's released. But it's to try to get a good assessment of where they're at, what skills they have, what their strengths are, what their anxieties are, and to try to spend time building relationship and fully hearing them and helping build up skills and their competencies before sending them out into employment or, if possible, even before they get fully running in school. That when we do that, we see that our guys can be more successful. There was a time where we were able to really put guys in jobs, and for whatever reason, we were able to get guys employed. And that was really good, and we were really excited, but we kind of learned in our other opportunities through credentialing programs and different things. But we found out that some of our guys didn't necessarily have the skills to do it, to make it, as much as they wanted to and as much as they worked at it. And so we said, you know, it's our responsibility to kind of figure out on an individual basis how we can help them be ready for those opportunities. So, you know, that was one. And then I think the other thing that is crucial is with reentry, you have to hit the ground running. There isn't 30 days to figure things out. So we do our pre-release services, and then we have a transition meeting 30 days before release with the idea that we want everything in place day one. And we want them busy and occupied, and even if they're on EMU, which is electronic monitoring, we want to find ways to get them out in the community and involved in positive activities. You got to start right away, and so that would be the other piece of advice is to whether that's getting those referrals before release or getting connected with the young men and building relationships with them before they get out. That's crucial to success, I think, or what we found here.
This is Monty. I think for anybody who's looking at either building onto a reentry program or starting their own, you have to do research and development. You got to treat it like it's something that's important enough for you to do that kind of research. I thought I had a good grasp of what was involved in criminal justice and reentry because of my 15 years of law enforcement, and little did I know. And that's why I had to rely on professionals like Eric and his team and other programs that are already in place to learn what they did already and see what programs were already in place and what they were doing so well, and then look for a gap of services and say, you know what, instead of competing with these other folks that are already doing work, let me step into an area that is really not being addressed very well, and let me develop a program around those needs. And so if somebody takes the time to do that, takes some time to research and develop, they'll see openings in services where they could step into that, and we can have we can kind of complete that circle of services around that young person. So that would be my advice, because I started off doing it from my own perspective and own experience, and had to rely on others to really help me complete the kind of services we have at Victory Project.
Shaquan, you know, thank you so much for sharing your story. I want to know, though, you know, why did you want to be part of this radio show, and what else do you want to tell the public about youth like you who may be who are reentering our communities?
I just feel like they helped me so much that I can do that. I just, like, you know, do anything that they ask me, like, because they done helped me do a lot. I done went from getting out walking to here. They got me, they helped me find a job. I got my first car. I was doing deconstruction. And then I was still, I stopped that job because they were on the verge of closing down. Then I came, I called, gave them a call up here at the lighthouse. They got me working at UPS. Now I went from driving a 1994 Caprice Classic to a 2009 Pontiac G6. So I feel like I can, I owe them because they are a part of my success, as well as my mother and them. It's just, I'm just thankful. So I feel like I can do anything for them. I feel like they blessed me, got me, helped me accomplish my goals, and got me on the right path. I should be starting school in the beginning of January. I'm going for web design and information technology. And I don't think the Lighthouse is gonna let me get off the track from doing that.
Where do you think you would be without Lighthouse?
I have no idea. I know I wouldn't. I probably wouldn't have accomplished even half of the goals that I have with the Lighthouse. Because it's just so many different things. Like, they don't only just bring you in here and help you find a job. They talk to you. Like they said, they have community lunches where everybody mixes and mingles, and a lot of linking up and stuff. It just, they got so many opportunities for it, like the OSHA. I'm OSHA 10 certified. I took the class, the 10-hour class here. It's just a whole bunch of doors opening ever since I stepped foot in Lighthouse. And I'm just thankful for all the stuff that they did for me to help accomplish.
Awesome. So, Saquon, we're proud of you, and it sounds like we need to go for a ride in that Pontiac.
Is there room for all of us?
There's spaces.
For our listeners who want more information about Lighthouse Youth Services, you can go to lys.org, and Victory Project is victoryproject.org. Nathan, Monty, Eric, Saquon, thank you so much for being here. And sharing.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
Yep.
Great.
Thank you.
So our next show is we're going to be celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Children's Law Center. To stay informed about this or other upcoming shows, you can follow us here at Blog Talk Radio or visit the Children's Law Center's website at childrenslawky.org. Take care and see you next time on Spotlight on Youth. Thank you, everybody.